Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today on Deadline is looking at the New Year's attack on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. 14 people were killed and 35 others were injured when 42-year-old Shamsuddin Jabbar plowed a rented Ford F-150 into a crowd of holiday revelers. Here's the latest on the tragic incident. The Federal Bureau of Investigation at first believed that Jabbar was working with others, but they now say he acted alone. In 2023, the FBI said that Jabbar traveled to Cairo, Egypt, as well as Ontario, Canada, before returning to the U.S. in July of the same year. Officials are working to determine who he met while traveling abroad. Radicalized somewhere along the way, he had an ISIS flag in the truck at the time of the devastating event. In October and November of last year, Jabbar made two trips to New Orleans, where he recorded video using Meta glasses, seemingly scouting the scene of the attack. He was reportedly wearing those Meta glasses, which have an ability to record, as he drove into the crowd on New Year's Day. According to the FBI, he didn't use them to record during the incident. Then, on Monday, December 30th, Jabbar rented a white Ford F-150 in Houston and drove it to New Orleans the next day, New Year's Eve. The FBI's Deputy Assistant Director for the Counterterrorism Division, Christopher Rhea, said during a press conference that Jabbar had posted 5 videos to social media in which he proclaimed his support for ISIS. The videos were posted between 1:30 and 3 a.m. on New Year's Day. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the war between believers and disbelievers. Then, at approximately 3:15 a.m. Central Time, Jabbar plowed the truck into a blocked-off section of Bourbon Street, while also firing a gun into the crowd. This attack left the city, state, and country shaken. But, of course, it's most personal in New Orleans, a both big and small town that's set to hold Mardi Gras in March and the Super Bowl just next month. Due to the terrorist attack, the city had to postpone another big game, the Sugar Bowl, which was set for New Year's Day. It was rescheduled to January 2nd, and city and state officials ensured that the public was protected. To share more on the safety of upcoming events, U.S. Congressman Troy Carter joined WWL in New Orleans.
Troy, obviously, the city recovering from the horrific event, terrorist attack the other day. I know that you've been down here before this session started. Your thoughts?
You know, it was a horrific action of cowardice, terrorism that this clown would converge upon the city of New Orleans during a time of celebration to wreak havoc. I'm very proud of our local law enforcement, NOPD, our various sheriff's offices, federal FBI and federal agencies, as well as the FBI and the state police, who just absolutely stood up at a time when we needed them most to demonstrate our oneness in pushing back against terror and demonstrating to the American people, the Louisiana people, and more specifically the people of New Orleans, as well as those visiting for the Sugar Bowl, that we will do everything in our power to bring these clowns to justice and to ensure that the safety of our community is number one. Someone asked me, were we going to keep the Sugar Bowl going? And my answer was very clearly, as long as we're able to ensure the security of the people, because as important as this football game is, nothing is more important than the safety of our citizens and our visitors. And so when we postponed it, it was a measure of caution, abundance of caution, to ensure that we would be able to protect the people. And that's the mission that we carry forward now. The NOPD, our sheriffs in the surrounding areas, we know how to manage these large events. Sugar Bowls come every year. Super Bowls come frequent. Final Four, Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, PGA Tours. And with our NOPD and our surrounding partners, we have gained a reputation of being able to manage and protect our citizens. A terrorist attack is a different animal. A terrorist attack could happen anywhere. It can happen in anywhere in the world. And what happened in New Orleans could have happened anywhere. I'm grateful to our president for stepping up and releasing the unlimited funds to make sure the full faith and credit of the United States would back our governor and our mayor and our local law enforcement. My heart and prayers and thoughts go out to those individuals who lost their lives and their families. Our hearts and prayers go out to the many individuals who are still in the hospital recovering. And a certain huge thank you to the brave two officers who put their lives on the line in the line of duty and who were injured, who are now stable and recovering. A huge thank you to them, as well as all of the other law enforcement. Listen, we are Louisiana, we are New Orleans, and we're strong and we're resilient, and we'll rebound from this. And for the criminals out there, we will find you when you do these kind of things, and we will bring you to justice. It appears by all account from the FBI that this was a sole actor, that he acted alone, so it doesn't appear to be any accomplices. But a message to anyone who thinks they can copycat, we will find you. There's no rock large enough that you can hide under.
Obviously, this presents after-action review opportunities to look at a number of things. Do you have any expectations at the federal level of what you might like to see as more, like a more proactive approach, a collection of actionable intelligence, maybe a look-see at algorithms as to what's out there on the social media, social networks? And sometimes it seems as though we're able to respond to things that are posted relatively quickly, and then other times we seem to have things fall through the cracks.
Yeah, there are a couple of points in that regard. As you know, I served on the city council many years ago and represented the French Quarter. Had those bollards been working, particularly in the 100 block of Bourbon Street, where the width would not have accommodated a car. On Canal Street, the width is wide enough to accommodate a car to jump the sidewalk. So right. Two tow trucks in that space would have been sufficient to stop that vehicle. And in the 100 block of the, after you pass the 100 block, the 200 block, the sidewalks are too small. If the bollards are up, a car could have never gotten through there. The second point is, 2019, there was a study, I'm told, that identified that there were weaknesses. We need to go and look at that study and figure out how to amplify and activate whatever those recommendations are, in addition to doing a complete postpartum on every entry point and exit point of the quarter to ensure that every best practice and every modern technology is utilized, that nothing like this can ever happen again. You know, the very nature of terrorism activity is it's shock and awe. It catches a point of weakness. Now we have to tighten our hatches and make sure that we're using everything in our power to correct that. What I'll be asking as a member of the Homeland Security Committee is that we look deeper into, refortify our issues and our resources with Homeland Security, with FBI, with Department of Justice, in conjunction with our local authorities, to look at all of the signs that we may have missed before to ensure that we're doing better as we go forward. This is going to be a work in progress.
The FBI later revealed that Jabbar had bomb-making materials at his home. In his personal life, Jabbar served the U.S. military, but as of 2022 was working for Deloitte, where documents obtained by ABC News showed he was making around $125,000 a year. But he also spent about a quarter of that on ex-wives and kids. He had three divorces from 2012 to 2020. As more information comes out about the suspect and people try to answer the unanswerable question, why did he do it? Let's also remember the victims and their families. Dr. Corey Hebert from LSU Health New Orleans joined Odyssey's WWL to share more about how to handle the traumatic event.
I know you and your significant other bleed purple, gold, and green. You are natives of this city. You love this city. Tell me your thoughts, Doc, when you heard about what happened and from then.
Well, you know, Tommy, I just wanted to say that, you know, we are a resilient group, right? But damn, do we have to be resilient all the time? Can we catch a break? And the bigger part that I want people to really recognize about this is that right now we have our immediate nervousness and just fear, right? And then we have this push of solidarity, and we're going to beat this, and we're, you know, united, New Orleans strong, and that's where we are right now. But when all the people leave and we're all standing here, we are going to feel a little bit different. And the reason why is because if this had happened on a side street in Metairie, that's one thing that's still horrible and terrible. Or if this had happened because a drunk driver had hit someone or hit a group of people, that's also horrible, terrible, and it also has happened. But this is the equivalent of someone breaking into your home and you going back into your home after the police have left and feeling like, what am I supposed to do now? And the reason why is because the French Quarter is our home. Everybody that's listening to this right now has done some type of celebration, has done some type of a family event, has done something in that hallowed space, no matter how raucous and having so much debauchery at some point. That's our home. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to start to feel like we can't go to our home. And that's something I really want people to recognize, because right now, you know, like I said, when you first got the news, you were startled and couldn't believe it and all that. And now this big push that we're going to be okay, but you're going to start probably having a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of a headache, a little bit of difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, you know, being a little bit more jumpy than usual, not trusting people as much. And the reason why is because this could have happened anywhere to anybody at any time when you want to have someone to inflict damage on you. And so it doesn't matter that it happened here, because it could have happened anywhere. And I want to say just one more little piece of that is that the reason why we have to recognize all of this in the bigger picture is because if people were inherently evil, I want people to really hear what I'm saying. If people were inherently evil, this would happen all day, everywhere. But it doesn't. So that's the solace I want you to have when you start having these feelings of, I'll never go to the French Quarter again. I'll never feel comfortable again. Because people are inherently good. And this type of thing, when someone wants to inflict pain and to do these types of things, there's nothing you can do about it anywhere you go. So the key to it is to protect yourself and to make sure that you can decrease the amount of anxiety by preparation and doing things to make yourself feel better.
Whether it be someone driving a truck through a parade crowd or a mass shooting at a shopping center or school, acts of mass violence and terrorism continue to plague the U.S. But why haven't we been able to solve this problem? Margaret Brennan, a CBS News foreign affairs correspondent and moderator of Face the Nation, joined Odyssey to offer some perspective.
I want to talk about the attack in New Orleans, but go a little bit broader. It's been branded a terror attack. The FBI says that this man operated alone, but he was influenced by ISIS. What's your impression of the influence of ISIS in the world today?
Well, the individual, the attacker in New Orleans, to date, it appears, the reporting would suggest he was inspired by ISIS. In other words, somebody who was drawn to extremism and to the ideology that ISIS has been spouting online for years now, but has recently made a big push through social media, through other other communication online to expand their reach. This is different from being, for example, an ISIS operative who was under the command and control of, for example, the caliphate in Syria that the U.S. Went to battle to defeat, or ISIS-K, which is emanating out of Central Asia and Afghanistan. It really speaks to the concern that an American-born, an American-raised person who is in the United States military, even someone of that profile, could be drawn to domestic violent extremism.
The new year has started on a somber note, but it's important to remember the resiliency of our nation and of New Orleans in particular. Much like it did following the devastating events of Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans will bounce back. Bourbon Street is open and it's already bustling again. As the New York Times noted, New Orleans is famous for infusing grief with flashes of levity and music, a deliberate and defiant tradition of celebrating life and exalting the dead, particularly when, quote, the feelings of pain and loss are the sharpest. However, it's not always easy to be resilient, and that's okay. Those who are struggling after traumatic events such as this should seek help. The Office for Victims of Crime has a webpage that offers help tools for anyone who finds themselves suffering after a major event like this one. For those who are looking to talk to someone, you can call or text 855-4-VICTIM to receive support. Lastly, here at On Deadline, we'd like to dedicate this episode to the family and loved ones of Billy DeMaio, a fellow Odyssey employee who was one of the victims in the attack. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and loved ones. Billy was just 25 years old, a New Jersey native and lacrosse player who flew to New Orleans for New Year's celebrations, and his life was cut short. Billy had a smile that could light up a room, and his laughter was truly infectious, his family said in a statement. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.